Hey everyone, Dave here. You're going to hear a little noise on Stuart's line that I couldn't account for, and I am working with some new equipment and new software trying to try some different things. I think it's still a great conversation. Thanks for listening.
The Attack Zone, Season 3, Episode 3, Whiz Kids Open.
Hello, Dice fans. You have, once again, stepped into the Attack Zone. We are bringing you the A to Z of competitive Dice Masters, trying to better ourselves through strategic play, great decision making, and hoping that along the way we help you as well. I am Dave, and there's actually no one else here right now. Like Donkey said in Shrek, I'm all alone. Don't worry, I won't do that again. But I will be joined later by Isaac and Stuart. You would, of course, normally hear them on Thursdays on the Reserve Pool podcast. But they've joined me today, and we're all going to talk about our recent experiences at the Whiz Kids Open. Thanks to the busy event schedule and traveling back and forth and so forth this past weekend, it prevented us from doing a normal show, not to mention all of the playtesting leading up to that, so we're doing this just a little bit differently today, but they will be joining me later. But first, we do have some exciting announcement for our patrons. That would be those who have pledged support to the show at patreon.com/theattackzone. Patreon is patreon.com/theattackzone. Every month, all of our patrons are entered to win the foils and rares that we pool in the six-pack feature, and of course, super rares too. And it's time for January's winner to be announced. So let me get the random number generator up here. Our January winner is Andrew Short. Awesome. Andrew, you're going to get an email from us shortly, and we will work out the details. Email us if you hear this show before we've emailed you. Fair's fair. You will be getting a nice stack of cards, including super rare Lex Luthor from World's Finest, the first super rare that we get to give away on this show. A lot of fun cards in this one. We have the rare Dick Grayson, foil rare Lockjaw, foil uncommon Superman, just a lot of rares and foils floating around here for you, and we're happy to be able to send them along to you. Now, as I said, this isn't a normal show due to the WKOs, so we could not fit in a six-pack, but fear not. We are still giving you stuff, we're still dropping stuff in the prize pool from this show, and this is something I'm really, really excited for. So, first, let me explain that to get this stuff, you're going to have to be a backer by Patreon's deadline on 2/28 to be eligible for the drawing. As long as your backing hits on their processing date of 3/1, you will be good to go. Because we're going to have two separate drawings this month. The first thing are some rares. While we couldn't do the six-pack, we did get some packs at the WKO, and we're just passing those right along to you. And I got to say, these are some nice rares, and we have a foil here as well. We have Captain Cold's Cold Gun Rare, Black Adam Rare, Jay Garrick Rare, Cyborg Rare with that awesome Shield Fixing Global. And we have a foil common Clayface, which is pretty sweet. Captain Cold's Gun is just an awesome card. Black Adam is pretty disruptive. Just a really nice selection there that we have pulled, and that's going right in the prize pool. To add to that, we also have the foil version of the Slander basic action card, which has recently been given away as a prize. That's the two-cost basic action from Spider-Man, and we're adding that to the prize pool for this month as well. That's the general prize pool. But what I'm about to tell you about is what I am probably the most excited about. In a separate drawing, that's right, there are going to be two drawings this month. We have some spare prize cards here for you. We have foils for you. First off, we have the foil version of Prismatic Spray. We have the foil version of Kryptonite. We also have a foil version of Slander for you. We have the foil version of the Frontline, which looks so good in foil. If you have not seen that, this card looks amazing. They use different artwork as well. And we have the foil version of Big Entrance. So this is a separate drawing. We are giving away these five cards to backers who are signed up and ready to go so that It all hits on 3-1 when Patreon's processing deadline is. That's all there for you. As long as your backing hits on their processing date at 3-1, you will be good to go. All right, it's time to flip into conversation mode. Let's bring on the others. All right, joining me now, since they stole JT and Randy a couple of weeks ago, we have decided to steal them. Joining me from the Reserve Pool podcast, we have the dulcet tones of Isaac and the okay tones of Stuart.
Good to know that I'm a different podcast, same treatment.
I love it so much. That is, I love the dulcet tones, and I love the Stuart. Oh my God. Smackdown.
Okay, so Stuart, you are, I don't know about anybody else, I was a big fan of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And on that show, the writers had a theory that O'Brien, who was kind of the everyman, must suffer because people can relate to him. So Stuart, you are a very relatable fellow. You're very good. You're very good natured. You're kind of aw shucks in some ways. And I think that we use you as that person who can get empathy. I just made all of this up.
I'm glad I have a purpose.
Hey, now. You have a lot of purposes, and you serve them all excellently, and we are happy to have you here, and I'm very happy to have both of you on this podcast. We have talked, just moments ago, that this is the first time either of you will have been on this show, so that's a long time coming, and I apologize for the oversight, but you're here now, so let's not worry about the fact that it took so long and celebrate the fact that the time has arrived. Yes, we want to talk about those WizKids Opens that just happened over this past weekend. Of course, Isaac and I, along with JT and Randy, were up at Eternal Games up in Detroit, or on the outskirts of Detroit. I believe Warren, Michigan is the official town, and I have to say, well-run event. If you have not gone to one, and that's a place that you are able to get to when the next kind of whatever the WKOs are this year come around later, you know, in the 17-18 competitive season after this one wraps up, whatever, get there. They were fantastic. And Stuart, you went to a WizKids Open over in Dallas or the outskirts thereof, correct?
Yeah, out in Lake Worth. This is just a little bit east of or west of Fort Worth.
Okay, so near the Fort Worth area. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Stuart, since you were the one down there, we're going to kick it to you first. We're going to start off by saying that amongst the TRPers, we had a fantastic weekend. I won the Detroit WizKids Open. Stuart, you won the one that you went to. Isaac and Randy both placed in top eight and earned qualifications for U.S. Nationals. I did the same, of course, and it was just a super, super fun time this weekend. Truby was top eight at the WizKids Open he went to in Glen Burnie. So just a lot of success all around. I'm really happy. Stuart, I want to know about your impressions down there, what you saw, and a little bit about what you played, because it was something just a bit different.
Yeah, well, this is the third time that this particular store is hosted. They do a great job. They throw out a lot of product for free. I think we got double prize support. We got, I think, 12 packs for just playing. The drafts were double packs. So if you did a quick fire draft, you got, I think, 30 packs instead of just the 15 or 24 instead of the 12 that you drafted with. They did gravity feeds for $50 all around. So, I mean, they do a really good job of taking care of us there for sure. So I have zero complaints there. They get a lot of room. They do a lot of click stuff. They had a huge event with clicks the day before. So I'm familiar with that. And a lot of my guys that I play here locally, made it out as well. It wasn't a big showing of people. We only had eight, unfortunately. There were some guys that from Austin that didn't come down, and then there's a great store out Tyler that I talk about a lot, Ground Zero Games. None of those guys made it out either. Don't know really why or what, you know, you can make up reasons or suspect about reasons, but you know, sometimes, you know, it's hard to travel those 2-3 hours to play a game, so I totally respect that and understand it. So a little bit down from last time. We were hoping for more, but still, it was great people. And of the people that played, it's still the best players in the area. I mean, we had some really, really strong players.
And that's really good because I know that you were, we talked on the phone as I was driving home from hanging with Randy and JT this morning after the event. You were driving to your event and you wanted to try, you have a qualification, you came in with one. So you wanted to try something just a little bit different, maybe a little bit of theory crafting. So it's good that you had those kind of players there because I'm sure that helped you get some useful information about this team. So go ahead and tell us a little bit about this.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, I faced mask ring teams. I faced Bard teams. I faced Venom Poly teams. So I really faced, you know, everything that's out there. Yeah. No Beholder teams, but a lot of people teched against it. So I think the cat's out of the bag on that one now.
I'll tell you what, it was the same thing for us. Yeah. There were no Beholder teams, and most people had teched for Beholder. Okay, there was one that we know of that I think that we saw.
Amanda ran a team with Beholder Ring and ended up doing pretty well. She was in like top 12, 13, I think.
Okay. That was the only one I think that we noticed.
Yeah. There wasn't much. But
there was a lot of tech there too. So, yeah, no surprises there. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Stuart.
Yeah. When Faerun Under Siege first came out, the bard that we were all really excited about was not the +1/+1 bard, at least internally. We were really excited about what we called the P bard, which was the protection bard. So if you're not familiar with that, it's the other of the four bards that no one looks at. So this one also is a 4-cost. It's got experience, and it says while Half Elf Bard is active, your other character's dice of equal or lower level to your highest level Half Elf Bard are not affected by opposing character abilities. So at the time, I mean, what was huge? Well, it was Hulk blowing up your stuff. And so, you know, that's what we played around with a lot initially. I mean, I remember we even grabbed, you know, dice that didn't even match it because that's after Vassal went down and tried to, you know, play with it before we even could. And so I've wanted to play with this card. I've done it in Legacy events. I've done it in Limited events. And I wanted to bring it to a WKO. So I just kind of built around it. So I had that bard and I paired it with Magic Helmet. And so if I can get my bard out on level 3 with a Magic Helmet on it, there's really nothing you're going to do. You can taunt it off. I mean, that's definitely one way to get it off the field. But once it's there, it's pretty close to being locked down and all my stuff is protected. So mm-hmm. Venom can't touch me anymore. D-Wiz can't touch me. Hulk Blast can't touch me. And, you know, if there was a Rare Crow, can't touch me. And the biggest thing, I don't have to worry about Constantine anymore because none of my characters can be affected by opposing abilities. That's definitely an opposing ability. It totally neuters Constantine. And that was my big, like, if I can just get this to work once, I think I'll be happy kind of thing. You know, it's like when people do the limited wish into, you know, into something gigantic like Phoenix Force or something. It's like, well, yeah. I made it work. I'm happy. So that's what I built it around. I did put Hulk on there, Green Goliath, to clear the board. I ran the other Beholder, the one that when fielded gets 2 free globals. I ran Elf Thief. I ran Breaker to if I did run into Imprisoned or Cold Guns. I ran Blue Eyes. And I ran the Rare Crow from World's Finest. And so that was my big thing. I was like, if I can find a level 3 bard out there, I can Hulk Ping, clear everything else out, and then take their bard next turn. Or I can take their Hulk, or if they try to ping me and clear my board, I'll just steal their Hulk. So it was a huge piece on my team, and it worked wonders when it actually wanted to roll a character, which was not as often as I wanted it to. So if you notice, I did not run PXG either. I just let that come to me. And there was a game in Swiss, and I played that gentleman again, Todd. I played him in top 8, and he didn't have PXG either, but he did have Rip. So between Rip and Blue Eyes, we made things work pretty well.
That's pretty awesome. We were very intrigued by that bard. I mean, obviously the +1/+1 bard is what has prevailed and shaped so many things for almost the last year. But protection bard is a very good card. Just, it doesn't turn anything into an instant win condition.
Yep.
But as you showed today, with the right supporting cast of characters, it could be pretty effective. I'm sure that our managing editor will force you to write an article at some point, as he has forced me. But yeah, you laugh, Isaac. But Isaac's taking pictures at the event, like while I'm playing, saying very casually, I'm just taking pictures so that you have some stuff for the article that you're going to write.
We discussed who was going to write this, since there was the four of us going, and I've written the last couple Detroit ones, and JT, we got second to the last one, wrote his experience up, so it was kind of a, okay, well, the higher you finish, the more likely you write this up. So I looked at Randy in the top eight. I said, looks like JT's out of writing this week, so...
Right.
He'll be safe. And then once Randy and I missed our games in top eight, I'm like, oh, hey, even I qualified and I don't have to write this one up. Excellent.
Yep. So, Stuart, what are your just some of your overall impressions of the team's performance, as well as what you faced or how it did in certain matchups?
Yeah.
Was there anything where you felt like you didn't have a tool that you needed?
Well, I mean, I lost game one.
Okay, yeah.
I lost to Craig, one of my teammates here locally, and he had a very standard Bardsaw team and just outraced me. I couldn't land characters, and so I wasn't able to protect myself, and, you know, that's just the way it went. In game two, I faced a Masked Ring team, and I was able to handle that. I just got board control and just kept clearing. He missed some rolls, but once I got Hulk out, I mean, there wasn't much that he could do. He didn't have any removal. And then I faced another team that was Bard specific as well. Going up against in the finals, I faced a team with Hulk as well, with PXG. No Elf Thief, but they had the rare Gorilla Grodd, not the one that grants Overcrush, but the one that can't be blocked unless you have a crossover character.
Yes, and that also has one of the Energy Fixer globals.
Fixer was a lifesaver for me to give myself some extra energy. One turn, I re-rolled four sidekicks. I re-rolled four sidekicks, my Bard, and a Polymorph, and they all came up sidekicks.
Yikes.
Yeah. So I used that a lot, actually, leading into things. So that was great, but that Gorilla Grodd was mean, man. I had to have two Scarecrows out at a time to be able to protect myself from that. And I was lucky enough to be able to do it. I attacked with it once as well. So that saved me.
Yikes.
So Rarecrow was the hero for sure. I never needed the Vibrator, but I had it there.
Yeah.
I would say, and I'd like to hear both of your impressions on this. Rarecrow is a card that we were very, very, very excited about at the time, but has yet to really earn its place in the sun. And it's obviously a very good card. It was something that we were looking at early, like, well, do we put it with a Bard team or instead of a Bard and just steal what the opponent's using and just do it that way? Like, how do we put this together? And ultimately, it didn't end up being a part of a solution that we found at the time. Do you guys think that Rarecrow might be ready to step out, that it's ready for prime time?
It needs the right pieces around it is the problem. And like, it doesn't, and Stuart and I were talking about this, like, it has to have Blue Eyes or it has to have Fabricate.
Yes.
Because you can't Magic Missile this thing down. It's not a good use of your, you know, of your abilities. And you're not going to run something else that's going to, I mean, you end of days with it. Right, and suddenly you have two characters and they have none. But again, it's a six cost action. You've got to get the characters out. It's probably not going to be worth it. I think it's got a definite place, and Stuart proved here today it definitely puts threat. I mean, I played Ben in one of the Swiss games up in Detroit, and he had it with Windrider, and he was using Monsters Reborn to basically get them onto the field, re-roll my sidekicks with Windrider and try and steal my Bard. He was definitely doing some damage and had the potential to get where he needed to. He just could never get the Rarecrow to come up and have a bolt left when he did get it to come up, or it just, like, the mechanics weren't there for him perfect. So it's there, there's a possibility, but it's not as clean cut, right? The Bard teams have proven there's a clean-cut way to win, and this is a way to win that can be very successful, but it definitely comes away from the away from the spike and a little more into that Johnny mentality of like, this could be really cool if it works, but
right.
It's not.
It's a lower percentage play.
Right? Yeah. It's not a guarantee.
And there's a lot of risk. I mean, you're risking that your opponent has something that you can maybe steal to win your game. You're hoping they brought PXG as well. I mean, if I played a swarm team that was just little guys and swarm, I was probably done. I mean, I wouldn't have been able to ramp hard enough. You know, it was hard. I didn't have a three cost, and I knew that was hard, especially going first. You know, if I couldn't, I mean, I knew that magic helmet was my bailout. You know, if I rolled a sidekick and fist shield or something, okay, I buy a magic helmet and I'm still okay. You know,
right, because that still helps what you're trying to do, especially depending on what your opponent
is. Polymorph and magic missile were my three costs. That's what I just convinced myself of, my two basic actions. And poly did some work for sure. And magic missile, I won a game on turns. I won game two in top four at turns, at time, basically. And so we went to a game three playoff, and I was able to get a thief and a magic missile and then save four bolts on turn three. And I just magic missiled all his stuff off, and that's how I was able to win. So, I mean, I definitely got lucky. I mean, this team is susceptible to a lot of things that I just didn't run into or was able to avoid.
Fair enough. Let's move on to Detroit for a moment here. And of course, Stuart, congratulations on the win. I believe that is your third WizKids Open win, correct?
It is, yes. And congrats to you as well.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Isaac, normally since you're the guest, I would let you go first. But since this was my first time in Detroit, I at least want to give some of my impressions of the store and stuff before we get started with this. For one, this was probably the biggest, best lit, cleanest play space that I have seen in a game store other than the only thing that's probably a little bit bigger is Mr. Nice Guy Games in Monroeville, PA, where I have played several different things, including Dice Masters, Destiny, lots of things there. It's just big open. It used to be like an Office Depot, so they just opened the whole place up and took great care of it, and it's awesome. And clearly, John, running Eternal Games, has put a lot of thought into how he wants his place to look. There are more board games in there than you commonly see at a lot of friendly local gaming stores. Tons and tons of product. I was very pleased what he did with the prize structure. Everybody got 10 packs of Green Arrow Flash for participating. He had some extras for the folks in the top eight, as well as, I think, some of the people in the side events, though I'm not 100% sure there. But he made sure that the people who went to the event and did well, or even just the people who went to the event in general, they really got their money's worth. I mean, it was a $15 event, and right away you get 10 packs in addition to the blank art cards. And that's just pretty sweet. So I thought the store was great. I thought this was a really efficiently run event. It was just slightly over 8 hours from start to finish. And that is five rounds of Swiss, a break for about 45 minutes, and then three rounds of top eight. And it was, I think, about 8:15 when we finished the last game. I mean, just phenomenally well run, I thought.
Yeah, we didn't even start on time, right? I mean, we started a little bit later, like closer to 12:30 with them, trying to figure out, you know, where a few people were. And there were a lot of people that had not registered. I mean, I didn't pre-register because I wasn't sure if I was coming. But, yeah, I mean, it was nice, too, that in the past the events have been at the same time as a bunch of HeroClix things. And John lined it up where he's doing HeroClix next weekend. So this was all Dice Masters, which was nice.
Doing this on a Saturday was much, much, much appreciated. I hope other stores follow suit, take note, do the same thing. It made it a lot easier for me to get to because I'll tell you what, by the time we rolled back into where we were in Ohio, it was midnight, I think, maybe a little later. So to drive home from there a little bit would have been absurdly difficult and then work the next day if it was a Sunday event. So I hope this becomes more the rule rather than the exception. Certainly appreciate everything John did up there. Rob was a great judge as well. They both handled those duties. Anything that was asked was well explained. It was funny. We had to double check because Junior and I weren't 100% sure about the the game three rules.
Yep.
And he comes over and he says, yeah, it's this. And he starts to say, because, like, he always explained everything and he did it so well, because of, and we cut him off. We're like, nope, it's cool. The reason is, as long we have the answer, and that's totally fine with us. We don't care what the answer is. We just wanted to make sure that we knew what it was. But he was ready to launch into a big explanation. We're like, nope, we're good.
Yeah,
we trust you.
John always has a very well thought out, conversation with everything he does. Like, there's no, I think it's this. Like, he'll stare at you with a question, and then he'll just walk away and go, okay, mm-hmm. I'm gonna go find this out. And yeah, I mean, this is why, and I've said it numerous times before, but this is why Detroit to me is, I mean, it's my second home there. Those people there are awesome. They are,
yes,
by far some of the most talented Dice Master players I have played. And I'm not knocking anybody else's local communities, and I'm not knocking the scene as a whole, but when I jump into that tank, I mean, Tony is effective, very affectionately called it the Shark Tank. It is,
yes,
literally a Shark Tank. There was no easy game there.
No, there was absolutely not a single easy match. There is a very, very high concentration, as you said, of skilled players, whether they're creative brewers or people who just like fell in love with a team concept and have just tweaked it as new cards come and whatever else. And they just know their team inside and out and how to play it in all sorts of situations. Just there's so much of that up there.
Yeah, you never get that easy game. And it seems like that site is notorious for you lose your first game and you go on to win the whole thing.
Yeah, I experienced that a little bit.
JT had that when he won it last year. I had that. Travis, who won it the first round, I think the year previous, lost to my son. It was his only loss in round one. I just remember he felt like, he was saying how he felt so dejected that I lost this 9-year-old. I don't know what's going to happen. And then went through and didn't have another loss even into the top eight there. So it's just, it seems to be that knock you down. And then you're like, all right, I'm going to roll up my sleeves and realize that this is going to be a hard climb, but I'm going to get there. And you definitely got there. So congrats.
Thank you. Yeah. And I'll tell you what, not only did I lose the first game, I lost to the person that I had to face in the finals match, and it wasn't a close game. In fact, we got to a point in the game. I was in a bad spot. I had missed some crucial rolls. I wasn't going to come back, and I needed to step away and collect myself and retool. So I scooped. I said, well done, shook his hand, and gathered my things and just took a few minutes. And I needed to do that. If I hadn't, it would have been a bad day. And I was already worried after losing the first that it was going to be a bad day, because when the rolls are against me, it feels like they're against me for a while. I know that's not how any of that works, but it's just how it feels. But yeah, then I had to go ahead and face him in the last match. And certainly going into that, it was in my mind how poorly the first game went for me. And that's absolutely a factor when you get to the top cut and you're likely to face somebody at some point who you faced before, just because the way Swiss has the best records rise to the top.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. That's what I knew going into those last one or two rounds, that somebody I was sitting in front of, I'd be sitting in front of again in the top eight. And sure enough, my last match. And Swiss was my first match in the top eight. And I really think, and Jomar played a heck of a very unique team. And I think what he saw working well by the time the end of our Swiss game came up, he was ready to put right into play in the top eight. And I knew we were pretty mirrored up with our Hulks just blowing up each other's fields. Like, we were just having a great time with it. But he had one little difference in there, and his cold gun shot my Hulk and neutered him. And that was enough to say one Hulk wins and the other one goes home.
Right. And I guess that makes sense as the difference. I didn't obviously get to you were a couple of games down from me, so I didn't get to see or hear what was going on. But I know that the Hulk smash was going back and forth a couple of different times, both in Swiss, where I did get to hear it a little bit, and then again in the top eight. So that was I guess ultimately what was the difference then, cold gun the Hulk so that it doesn't ping pong back and forth, right?
Yep. Oh yeah. 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 Very, very much stop the pinging and the ponging of the of the Hulk. So it was it was unique. It was fun. He was the only person I saw running Lockjaw, and as much as everybody is ramping so hard in this game, Lockjaw was such an easy thing. He just looked at my three dice in my used pile, and you know, the one I was getting ready to PXG's, like, I'll name that one character. Yeah, I mean, it was a no-brainer, you know, and between that and the Hulk, there was so much field blowing up. It was insane. Like, it was everything Imprisoned is, but the exact opposite of it.
Yeah, I was fully expecting to see Lockjaw. That was another reason I wanted to try this P-Bart out, so...
Yeah, Lockjaw is going to make things interesting, though, especially as we get into Ninja Turtles 2 becoming legal and the basic action, its name is escaping me right now, but you're going to bail me out, gentlemen.
Momentum,
thank you. The one cost that rolls stuff from prep. I mean, yeah, fine, send it, but now on my turn I can just play Momentum and get it back, because normally that stuff's stuck in prep for the for that turn. So Isaac, yeah, talk about your team just a little bit. I know you had Hulk Bard kind of thing going on there, correct?
I did, yeah. I was basically took my Bard Buzzsaw team and realized that my biggest weakness is Mask Ring. And especially when it's Raven, Oracle to Raven to rare or to OP Scarecrow, it's just that team frightens me. And and I knew I needed some of the tech against that, whether it was spray or honestly, I said, you know what? I can get up to Hulk energy wise. Why not just buy a Hulk? And first game against Jin, and you ended up playing Jin also, Mask Ring. Second game against my son, what did I help him learn how to play so I could get better at it? Mask Ring. Yeah. And I had to have that Hulk, and I knew it. Like I told him the purchase order. He had it down. He knew what to do. And I could get to my Hulk, and I was able to ping him. But luckily, I squeaked one out against him. And round four, who'd I line up against? Randy with Mask Ring.
Mask Ring.
I saw it. I also teched for Imprisoned and brought Breaker. And I also teched for Beholder and brought End of Days. I saw neither Imprisoned nor Beholder in any games the whole day. Even though I know there was plenty of Imprisoned running around.
Yes. So yeah, certainly on my team.
Yeah, exactly. And so, like, I was ready for it, but as you ran into, not everybody was as prepared for Imprisoned as a few of us were.
Yeah, that's absolutely the case. So you had the chance to talk about a couple of your games there. I did see that Junior was running his variation of Mask Ring that also included Imprisoned there.
Yep.
Now, lest anybody listening think that Mask Ring... Was there a lot of Mask Ring up there? Yes, absolutely. In fact, there were only two people I played that were not running some variation of Lantern Ring, limited only by imagination, as a win condition. But that's not a meta problem. That's a this team is very, very popular there problem. And a few of the people who have pioneered it and or have latched onto it and championed it, such as Junior and Randy, were going to be up there. Regionally, it's a very, very popular team. And when we're talking about, you know, decks in the meta and things to think about, top tier decks are not necessarily just the most competitive, but they're also, or instead sometimes, the most popular. And that's where that comes from. So I don't see it as a meta issue. What do you guys think about that?
Somebody was running it that won somewhere else. We were talking about it on the PDC Slack group. Do you remember who that was, Stuart? Or did you see that today?
I didn't see it. There was a lot to catch up on.
Yeah, I know. I don't know if it was in... Because Truby played in what? In
Glen Burnie.
I think it might have been... no. Okay, so somebody in Glen Burnie was playing it. I think it's exactly what you said. It's a popular variation, but it is definitely one that I was teching against locally here. The other guy that I expected to see it running it was Travis, who's from the Michigan area, who I faced in top four at Worlds and had to beat him in overtime after game two. because I knew what that team could do. Like, I knew if I'm running this buzzsaw variation, I could keep at its core Bard, D-Wiz, Elf Thief, and Gollum, and add in the techie pieces I needed around that. And Constantine, by far, every game I played, everybody was running Hellblazer, and everybody bought it turn one.
That was certainly a big part of my plan.
That is, I know that, you know, ripping an Elf Thief is something people enjoy doing or like to see Aether to threaten the energy, but your opponent usually has another plan they can do to get around that and go for the four costs, not worry about the ramp that turn. But getting a Constantine out and ready to go is so important right now, because there's so many powerful, cheap characters with wind fielded effects that you really got to shut down quick.
I'll tell you what, going second, especially if I saw my opponent go for an Elf Thief, easy choice, rip Constantine. And especially if I can, if I have a mask in there, my opponent, or I have PXG, the Professor X Global, of course, ripping a two cost and then being able to Professor X allows you to maintain perfect ramp down the road should those should the energy be available to you to do it. It ends up the exact same. Being able to, when you start off with that four energy, purchasing a two cost die and saving the two masks leaves the same amount of energy in your reserve pool, or same amount of dice rather in your reserve pool, as ripping a die and leaving a mask. So an important thing to think about if you're going second. If that opponent does Elf Thief, I just want to stop that. And there were other times the Constantine did work for me too, like somebody I played who was running Miri to pull morphing jars in to ramp up to a lethal bard swing. Well, I quickly got Constantine out, and now Miri couldn't do anything for him.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a great play. And this was, I think this was the first competitive team ever that I played without Constantine. You know, I've played one with Anti-Hero before when I was playing Imprisoned a long time ago. But yeah, so I mean, it was weird not having it, but I just worked around it. You know, if I needed to ramp harder, I would just sell out and spend a lot the turn before the turn, and then the next turn be able to PXG.
Right. So the team that I ran was, and I have or will have an article, depending on when Isaac wants me to put it up, either by the time this comes or shortly thereafter. But the team that I ran had a pretty familiar core. You'll see half Elf Bard, Master Lords Alliance, Constantine Hellblazer, Elf Thief, Lesser Harper, Oracle Master Investigator, Clay Golem, Greater Construct. Of course, I have Imprisoned as a basic action. I had some other things on there. I had Rip Hunter's Chalkboard. I ran the rare, mostly because I had a foil rare and I like shiny. I used the Oppression Begins as a means of teching against the Beholder teams. The way that we're still waiting on some final rulings from WizKids for this, the way that Beholder is played up in Detroit is that Beholder ends up being the source of the thing for Imprisoned. So if Beholder is knocked out, leaves the field, whatever, what have you, that's when the Imprisoned effect is canceled. So the Oppression Begins pretty well shuts that down. Of course, didn't end up seeing that. The other two cards, I was very heavily waffling between Gnome Ranger and Breaker the Magical Warrior, both primarily for Imprisoned defense for other people who have it or people who bought mine. Breaker has the advantage of also being able to knock a Lantern Ring die off the field. However, what I had, you know, on reflecting on some of the games I played against Lantern Ring, it felt like that was almost always a worse decision than just imprisoning their stuff. If they knock their die off the field, well, it's going to come back around and they still have a bunch of mask characters. If I can just take their stuff, they don't have the mask characters, and now they have a, not only have I captured their things, but they have this four cost die sitting in the field that they just can't do much with. So that's why I decided no Breaker, we'll go with Gnome Ranger. It's more expensive to field, but I can Rip Hunter it in, and we talked about that on the attack zone. And then Wasp, Bioelectric Blasts, that's the uncommon, that has the global, that's a two-cost deal, two generic energy, that is, deal one damage to target character die. I wanted that magic missile type of effect, and I could have used Slifer the Sky Dragon, but Wasp also has the advantage of being a purchasable die with an ability that doesn't stink. Each time you use a global, Wasp gets +1/+1 until end of turn. You may only use this ability once per turn for each global ability. Now, if I need to purchase something else, Wasp is right there and available, where I could not necessarily do that with Slifer. The scenario that I see is that crunch situation where I have most of my chief stuff already in the field, right? And my opponent has maybe a Constantine sitting out. So if I buy Wasp and my opponent names Wasp, well, no big deal. Just for Wasp being in the field with Bard, all my stuff's going to get that extra plus one from another character. But if I bought another Elf Thief, say, and Constantine names my Elf Thief, I can't field that Thief, or it can't attack, and the Thief that I already have in the field can't attack. So Wasp had an argument to be in there for that reason as well. Didn't often need it that way. Mostly I needed the global. And while it's more expensive, I like the flexibility of being able to use two of anything. If I had Bolt Fist, 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 I can use Magic Missile once or Slifer once, but I can use Wasp twice. So that was kind of my reasoning there. And I was really happy, obviously, with with how it turned out.
Yeah, it was definitely the right tech piece calls there for you.
Yeah, Ramp was there when I needed it. Magic Missile was there when I needed it, if I needed it. Otherwise, if I had Wasp, Global, and Oracle, well, for my opponent to do that, that costs them three, and that's incredibly punishing, especially if I have reason or need or opportunity to get a Clay Golem up and running, because now, in order to ping like a sidekick away to take away my lethal, they need to be able to do it three times. So nine energy to be able to do that is just a huge sink and really not feasible at all.
Yeah, kind of pricey.
Yeah, absolutely. I got to say, I perhaps intentionally made the... Well, not perhaps. I said, before I made this play, I said, I am about to do, willfully, the absolute stupidest play that I have ever done and perhaps will do in the game of Dice Masters. I was playing Junior in top four, and he was just rolling buckets of dice, despite me having control pieces down, just Professor X-ing like a crazy person. And even with Oracle, right? He just got so many cheap mask characters, it didn't matter. He had masks to burn. And I was trying to establish some board control and not putting a lot of damage pressure on him, so he didn't feel like he had to field characters, especially with some imprisons hanging out there. So he finally did have some stuff that was stuck in the field. I had an imprison come up. I'm like, all right, I need to take these, or I'm just going to lose this game. So... roll energy, re-roll energy. That's when I said, all right, this is maybe stupid, but I'll do it. And then I parallax because he brought it. Energy. I sigh. I'm like, all right, I'm going to parallax again. Energy. I said, okay, here it is. This is the stupidest decision I've ever made. I'm in now. I don't even care. I got my qualification. I don't care. Here we go. Parallax energy, parallax energy, parallax energy. We're just having like... we're just laughing like crazy as this is happening, like both of us. So after that, I quickly said, all right, you win game one. Let's move on.
I mean, you guys were like, you guys were having a grand old time of that.
Yes, we
and
were.
I believe afterwards, that's where somebody said, what is going on down there? And I said, oh, nothing. He just Isaac'd his dice. Don't worry about it.
It was the whole game though. Like, you took a picture and posted it on Facebook of the two of us playing. And, like, we actually both looked semi-serious, and that had to be, you had to have caught the only moment in the game where we weren't carrying on like idiots. Like, I don't know when that was, but
you caught it, you found it. Yeah, you looked mildly serious.
Yeah, that was a rare thing in that particular matchup. I'll tell you what, Detroit, for me, was a big, big lesson by example of the whole concept of who's the beatdown, right? And that's the concept, and that we did an attack zone episode on it. We probably do one again if you go in the back catalog and look for that one. The idea is that in every matchup, regardless of what kind of team you think yours is or your opponent's is, there's always an aggressor and a controller, and you have to know which one your team is or you're going to lose. Against Junior, He was going to win if I tried to play control. He was a more controlling team. He would have inevitability and win because he could get tons of masks on demand regardless of my control, and then he would just kill me with ring. So I had to play the aggressor. So game two, I pivoted. I started pressuring harder with Bard, making him have to field characters, making it so he couldn't feel like stuff could be in the unfielded. And then they were ripe to be plucked up with Imprisoned. And that was ultimately the choice that helped me win. And going into the final match, Dan had a very similar team to Junior's. And so the problem that I had in the first game with him was trying to be controlling with him. That wasn't going to fly. So going into the finals match, I already knew the adjustment that I needed to make, and I started off that way. That was what was able to win. It forced him to make decisions that were difficult, perhaps uncomfortable, and ultimately that's what helped me carry it. It was a big lesson in who's the beatdown.
Absolutely. And a great event, like you said, overall. Absolutely.
Yeah, 28 players, so 4 qualifications were up for grabs. The three of us from TRP who went there, who did not already have qualifications, walked away with those in hand. I'll tell you what, Dan, phenomenal player to get to the finals match the way he did. He told me early on that he hadn't played in many competitive events. He might have said that was his first, but I'm not sure about that, so I don't want to shortchange him.
Okay, yeah, it was.
Yep. And he played very well. He was very composed throughout. Even if he made a misplay, he tried not to like visibly let that be evident how he felt, which was great. And I asked him if he'd played anything else competitively. He said no. He played like some kitchen table magic with friends, his brother, who are good and smart at games, but not like competitive from what he had said. I would wager that Dan's going to make a splash competitively here, if the way that he played in this tournament is any indication. He was very smart, very composed and measured, and I really appreciated playing against him, and I really enjoyed meeting him.
And very well dressed.
Yes, he was. Well, that's why, you know what? That's why I thought maybe he had played Magic at maybe a little bit more of like a larger than local level, like maybe slam some GPs or even tried for a Pro Tour qualifier, because you'll see some guys in Magic go to competitive events dressed up a little bit, you know.
Yeah, he was dressed to the nines compared to most of us.
You don't wear a suit and tie to play?
Heck no.
Any final thoughts on where we are? I mean, the meta's about to shift here with who knows what some of the stuff in Ninja Turtles is going to do to it, especially Momentum and Rennet Tilly. We'll have Iron Man War Machine soon after, and then we're going to have 3 sets in 3 months before we hit the Nationals and Worlds things going into May and June.
Yeah, I mean, stick with what you know, but don't be afraid to come outside of that a little bit, right? I mean,
yep.
I went back to stuff I knew and knew how to play and knew how to pilot. Randy went back to a team he knew how to pilot well, mm-hmm. and you went with something that you knew how to run, right? And that's what did it, and that's got to be a strong suit for all of us to run what you know, or, you know, put a helmet on a Bard.
Or just do something completely different and get lucky.
Yeah. Well, okay, I mean, I'll tell you what, I had to go back to school because I had really settled in on some long game, expensive control stuff before like the first Bard Blitz stuff really happened. And all of a sudden the game like shifted completely from what it had been. And it was an uncomfortable position for me. I had this style that I really liked. It was longer, it was methodical, and I felt completely out of sorts for a while. And I was really questioning myself, and you guys know this because you had to put up with me. I was really questioning myself. I was questioning, like, how can I speak for the competitive part of the game when I don't feel like I understand it? How can I do some of these things? Am I even still good at this game? Like, do I even still understand it? So it was extremely cathartic to perform well this weekend. I honestly, like, I kind of had to step aside and compose myself after beating Randy, lest I get a little emotional, just because, I mean, and that was especially bittersweet because Randy's such a good friend, and I had to beat him during my qualification, and that was so tough when you have to do that kind of thing. But I mean, I had to step aside because it was just such a relief in that moment to not only have made the top 8, I've made top 8s before, But to at least win that first matchup and earn my qualification, like I had to step aside and compose myself because it was just such a relief to do that. And what Jin reminded me and Gary, that was my stated goal on the first episode of our relaunch of the Attack Zone, was win an event that's at least the WizKids Open level or PDC state, you know, PDC state level or up to WizKids Open National, whatever. So I managed to study up thanks to you guys running me through boot camp and the guys at my store playtesting, and big credit to all. I mean, you two playtested with me, Stuart. You were eavesdropping and poking in advice. Played with JT and Randy. I couldn't have done it without you guys. Bounced a lot of ideas off of Mike Plum. Took a lot of ideas from our conversation about Michaela's team that we had a couple weeks ago. And I could not have done it without you guys.
Hey, we're happy to help. Achievement unlocked, sir.
Boom.
Yes. yes. All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
Man, my pleasure.
Anytime. Anytime. Thank you so much for listening. We know that there are many ways in which you can spend your time, and we are, as always, very thankful that you choose to spend it with us. The Attack Zone is a production of the Reserve Pool Network. Theme music is courtesy of Nine Inch Nails, shared via Creative Commons at remix.nin.com. Promotional consideration has been given in the form of review product. Don't forget to check out our other podcasts, The Reserve Pool every Thursday and The Prep Area running opposite Tuesdays from us. We will be back in 2 weeks, and until then, keep rolling.